in this session. We just breezed last time through this table of contents and level one, and I mean breezed. To call it scratch the surface isn't even doing that justice. But level two is where the real rubber begins meeting the road when it comes to fleshing yourself out as a son of your Heavenly Father. And it's, I'm actually having to do some things like Keith did. I'm having to think about what not to tell you. I'll let that go. We'll take a look here at phase one. Verse 4 of chapter 1 of Proverbs tells you really what to expect in level 2. And it may sound kind of very, compared to the amount of information that you got in level 1, it may sound rather skimpy to come along and say in verse 4, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. First of all, you get your first appellative, a simple son. And when you take a look at the word simple, to give subtlety to the simple, what is going on there is that you've already got now some really wonderful things. You've got the four major decision-making skills that you're going to be utilizing for the rest of your life. Wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. But that has to be greatly developed in that. And what we're going to begin to realize is that when God calls you simple, that's not really a bad term. It can be. But really, the word simple, and one of the things that we do in our church is to define things. I'm not going to do that here, but oftentimes you start with a definition of a word. Simple is a good example of getting a definition of a word, but then you have to plug that into the context of what's being said to come up with what I call a working definition. And these are kind of working definitions. That simple is, first of all, being in a state of one-dimensionalness. You're one-dimensional. If you talk about someone being simple, if I was teaching this in my church, I'd ask my congregation, what does it mean to you to be simple? Well, and then we're not talking about being stupid, dumb, or ignorant. But if something is simple, when you look at a room that, for instance, has scant furnishings, you might come in and say, well, it's a simple design. In fact, you deal with design all the time. A simple design usually is a design that's unadorned. And that's really a good expression for the simple son. He's not adorned. He's one-dimensional. Even though he's got four great skills under his belt and a lot more, in the father's eyes, he's really he's one-dimensional in understanding and appreciating the father's business. He's been made aware of what the business is, but like I said, it's in level two where the father goes to the safe and kind of opens the safe up and pulls the blueprints out and lays them out in front of his son and says, here's what we're going to do together. And when you start to go through the book of Ephesians, that's what you start getting. That's why Paul starts talking about the one new man and what God's going to do with him and the setting forth the manifold wisdom of God in the mystery and all of these kinds of things are things that start dealing with fleshing out that simpleness to give subtlety to it. But the subtlety is going to be in two different forms. The simple son is going to have more information about his father's business that are subtle issues that start to give him multiple dimensions to the way he thinks about it. He's not just thinking about it singularly, but there's, as Paul talks about in Ephesians, breadth and height and width and depth to that whole thing. And at the same time, because of what you've already learned in level one, especially in phase one of level one, you know that this adversary is going to be dogging you on your heels now. And by the time you hit level two, he's going to crank up with each step you take and each level you go up and each phase of each level, he's going to crank up his resistance to that and opposition to that. And there are things that you begin to learn here, and I'm going to mention some of them, and some of them you might not like, but I'm going to mention some things whereby your deficiency in knowledge and lacking in that acuteness of comprehension makes you very vulnerable to the attacks of the policy of evil. And that's a very critical stage for a father with his son. When a son is reaching the stage of adolescence, if you've ever raised children and you've successfully raised them, you kind of look at your wife, and when they finally get into their 20s and things like that and get out of some of those hold-your-breath situations, you kind of go, phew, we made it. We helped them through this, and they made some bad decisions maybe, but made more good decisions, and the bad decisions they make weren't life-wrecking decisions. And you kind of look back and say, wow, we finally got them through that phase. That was a tough one. And usually it's those teen years, you know, those adolescent years. And I was a teen myself, and I had to have issues dealt with by my parents. But all I'm saying in that is there's a real parallel between that and what goes on here in your stage of sonship edification. Because the satanic policy of evil is something you also have to have subtlety to understand its dimensions as well. Because the policy of evil has got more dimensions to it than you're aware of in level one. And Satan has got abilities that he's going to be able to do to try to thwart your education on every step. And you start to learn things in the book of Ephesians called wiles, plural. And in the latter half of Ephesians, whereas in the book of Romans, you just simply get to put on the armor of light. Here, you're going to put on the entire panoply of armor to do battle with the adversary. That's a serious issue. Because what you're doing as a son, when you get to Romans 12 and you're going to present your body as a living sacrifice, you're not just presenting your body to your father. You're presenting yourself to the adversary too. That you're actually standing up and saying, all right, I'll take you on. And if I have to become the filth of the world and the offscouring of all things, then I'll do it. And it gets to be really dicey when you get into some of these things. And that's why the son needs to be given subtlety to understand and appreciate that. Let's talk for a minute about that subtlety issue. Well, let's go back and let it do its thing. I went to all the trouble. Subtlety. What is subtlety? Well, since there's two different issues that are going on here, you've got a coin, you've got both sides of that coin. One side of that coin has to do with the Father's business. One side has to do with the, shall we say, the hostile attempts to take over that business. That the adversary wants to thwart that. You see, Satan knows what he's got to lose. He knows he's going to lose the earth. But if he can retain the heavenly realm, he can still prove that God himself is not the Most High God, possessor of both heaven and earth. So the son is going to be facing off with some of these things where on the one hand, he's going to have to get some extreme acuteness, subtlety, in penetrating and understanding that, and discriminating finer points of the Father's business. That it's not just that grand idea that, okay, I'm going to be placed in the heavenly places, but that there's some genius behind the way he structured it. And that it's not just the sun, the moon, the stars, and the physical universe. But that physical universe, it's almost like, it's hard for me maybe to do this in Canada, but it's kind of like in our government, you take the word house, instead of talking about the word creature, you could take the word house. Well, in our country, you have this big building called Congress. That's the House of Congress. But within that house, there's two houses. There's the House of the Congress and the House of the Senate. And so you have bodies within that one entity. You've got an overall body, and then you've got bodies within it. In other words, it's just as simple as saying there's a little bit difference between understanding that Congress is in one big building to understanding the machinations of how it works. And that's where you begin learning in Ephesians, and some things about Philippians and Colossians are going to bring more acuteness to that to penetrate the finer points of the Father's business. And at the same time, we've got to take in consideration the other side of the coin. And you're going to get some acuteness and penetrating, discriminating understanding of the finer points of the satanic policy of evil as well. So those are all issues that really pertain to getting from that sophomoric stage into that more junior stage of your development so that you can become the young man that you're supposed to be. And again, I don't want to shortcut everything here, but I want to dwell a little bit more on the next issue. when you move into phase two, and by the way, we could bounce around here a little bit. When you take the basic table of contents, and you're talking about giving subtlety to the simple, where does that occur? And you should have a handout on all of this. This is really, if you take Ephesians, there's six chapters, and you cleave Ephesians in half, those first three chapters of Ephesians are dealing with this. Your latter three chapters are dealing with this. And within that book, you move from being the simple son to this young man. It's great to finally get the appellative man for once. But you get to become a young man. And the young man is going to be given knowledge and discretion. So according to level 2 in the table of contents of Proverbs 1 in verse 4, to give subtlety to the simple. And once the simple son has the subtlety, he now moves into becoming the young man, and the young man is going to get knowledge and discretion. Now you say, well, wait a minute. Didn't I get some knowledge up here to know something? Now I'm getting knowledge here? Yeah, you did. But this is talking about something different. It's like, here's wisdom over here. Here's wisdom here. And here's a wise man here. But those are not the same thing. When I was in first grade, my best teacher I ever had is my first grade teacher. In order for me to be raised from first to second grade, I had to have wisdom to do that. Now, a first grader didn't have much wisdom, but he's got some wisdom. So wisdom can be applied at really every stage of this thing. So you have to be careful to keep everything within its context. Well, let's go to that next stage and look at that appellative of the young man stage. Because I like talking about this one. This one's a goodie. The young man is not solely a reference to age, but particularly to the middle stage of development of sonship edification, which should belong to the young man stage. I want you to, if you got your Bibles open to Proverbs, come over to chapter 7. I want you to look in the exhortation section at something that's said here that's, I think, fascinating, where David exhorts Solomon about the young man, and he's going to talk about the young man, and he's going to talk about them in the sense of being the true young man or being the ones who are young only in the sense of age. He comes down here and pick it up at verse 6. He says, For at the window of my house I looked through my casement and beheld among the simple ones. Okay. We've already been told about those. And I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went on and so forth and so on. But what I'm after is a young man. You have both in verse 7, I discerned among the youths. That's young men in age. And then he says, a young man, that's the young man of spiritual maturity, or the spiritual appellative or description of a young man. And in verse 4 of chapter 1 there in the table of contents, it's focusing upon a young man who isn't just somebody who comes along and you say, okay, you're at an age now, and we now can call you young man. You know, it's kind of like when you hit that teen, you get it from 12 to 13, and they say, you're a young man now. Well, the world is going to slap that young man appellative on you, but I can tell you right now, I'm not yet, I'm almost 50 years old, 40-something, 8, we'll be 49, and I can be considered a young man. So it's not something that is based upon actual age, but it's something based upon the maturity level of that son. And it tells you that the young man is that he's talking about here. And he may, by coincidence, he may be a man of young age, but David particularly wants you to think about the young man of maturity and his mentality, the young man's stage. And usually that begins, you know, around the teen years and runs somewhere up in their 20s, early and late 20s, in natural sonship. But you start to begin to appreciate these terms where a young man is going to come along and he begins to realize there are some high stakes now involved in all of this. By the time you get to being the young man, you start increasing your involvement in more of the father's business aspects. You get an increased appreciation and advanced education in the father's training into his goals, his aims, and his objectives. And as all of this starts building in him and building in him, and this increased awareness and insightful, shrewd business comprehension begins to get developed in him of what this is all about, the son now turns his attention to the fact that I now am starting to get a reputation. And my conduct and my behavior and the things that I say and do are going to be reflective of my father and my father's business. And that starts to become very heavily weighted upon that son's understanding. That these goals, names, and objectives of his father's business, he doesn't want to tarnish those things. He is now going to have, as Paul will talk about in the book of Philippians, a conversation in heaven. And his reputation is going to be there. I was going to spend time on this, but I don't think I am. How far into this am I? Well, I don't know. We might spend some time on it. That word conversation in Philippians 3:20, we'll talk about that in a moment. But he has a reputation, but his reputation isn't on this earth. He's starting to gain a reputation in the heavenly places. That's why his conversation is in heaven. He has a reputation that could be ruined in heaven. And the son starts to become very aware of that. And the high stakes and the cause of his father's business is something that he now has very heavily upon his shoulders, as well as for his own maintaining of his own integrity and walking in accordance with it. And it all gets produced in that young man stage. So this is a stage where the son now in his edification really understands what's at stake. And he needs to be given knowledge and discretion. And so this characteristic feature, though, is one in which the son begins to realize, hey, I've got this reputation. In fact, let's do that. Let's come over. You may want to turn there, but it's you know the passage there in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 20. By the way, this is the reason why that you see the Apostle Paul, even in the book of Ephesians, starts dealing with your conduct and your behavior so much. What you say and how you conduct yourself is becoming very important because you're now making an impact into the heavenly places where you're supposed to be making it. They're becoming very much aware of you. They're up there, they're looking, they say, hey, look at that guy. He's getting prepared to come up and actually govern us and rule up here. And that reputation is being developed up there. And all the impact is being developed in the heavenly places. And that's why you have information in Ephesians about things like that. That's why Philippians is oftentimes taught, well, that's the book of practical Christian living. You ever heard that? Philippians is the book of practical Christian living. But Philippians, the reason you've got all this about your conduct, your walk and behavior is because the reputation of the son is on the line. And therefore, sinful behavior and things like that, but even behavior that you wouldn't think at first was all that big of a deal. In the book of Ephesians, one of the things he takes them to task for is something that you wouldn't think is a big deal. We're not going to look at it right now. I don't have time to develop all this stuff. But he takes them to task for murmuring and complaining. Well, come on. There's got to be worse things. Murmuring and complaining can have a major impact upon your reputation in the heavenly places. And Paul chides some people in the Philippian assembly for doing that very thing. Though it's not the first time he uses it, you have that verse coming up here in verse 20 with that word conversation. For our conversation is in heaven, from whence also we looked for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, when I dealt with that in my old days, I would have talked about the word conversation, and maybe you've got a study Bible that has in the margin this very thing. The word conversation there is the Greek word polituma. Polituma, this is the Greek word, P-O-L-I-T-E-U-M-A, means citizenship. You have a study Bible that says citizenship? And that one bothered me. Because the challenge to me was, in the Greek, that's what it means. It doesn't mean conversation. It means citizenship. And every Greek source I had, I tried to find conversation. It means citizenship. I worked on that thing, and I found out that if I understood my language properly, the term conversation is usually thought today only in that one sense of speaking, an exchange of speaking with somebody. We're going to sit down and have a conversation. We're going to exchange some thoughts and some opinions. We're going to get down to some feelings. We're going to have a talk. But I found out the word conversation originally meant, listen to this. I don't know if I've got it up here. No, I don't. I don't want you to see that just yet. The word conversation originally meant to have. I'm not making this up either. It's right out of the dictionaries you have available to you. It originally meant to have or make an impact. If you're going to have a conversation, if you take your son and you say, son, we need to sit down and have a talk. What are you trying to do with him? You're trying to make an impression on him. You're going to make an impact. The word conversation actually meant to have an impact or to have an influence, not only by what you say, but how you present yourself. A person's conversation in older English had to do with the effects of one's life in a broad and general way. And over time, it slowly came down to being distilled to the issue that someone has when they talk. A conversation came to mean giving information by whatever form, in order to have an impact upon the recipient of the information. But that overriding issue of having an impact. The term was used to describe the impact and influence a person had by how they conducted themselves in the sight of other people. So you've got the word conversation, the word citizenship. Which one is it? They have similar meanings. The term citizenship was understood not only as one's residence and status accompanying duties, rights, and privileges, but the word citizenship also at one time talked about how one utilized and responded to those citizenship privileges. When I was in school, back in the 1960s, I said my best teacher was my first grade teacher, Mrs. Pickett. Nobody left her room that didn't know how to read and write. And I had her last year before she retired. She was this chubby, white-haired, little, old school teacher. She was just wonderful. And on my report card, and I still have them all, unfortunately, my kids show them to me. I've kept them from them for years because I never wanted to know the awful truth. But as you went down those old report cards, I don't think they even do this today. There was reading, writing, arithmetic, history, all these kinds of things. And the last one was called what? Citizenship. And there was poor Mark, talks a lot, or whatever. Melted crayons on the register, which I did one day. We had steam registers. You ever put a crayon on one? It just melts it right. Oh, that was great. I went through like all 83 crayons. I got sent to the principal's office. Yeah. You weren't being marked as how great of a patriot you were. You were being marked on how your presence affected the rest of the class. That's what you were being marked on. How it made an impact upon that class. He talks, he disrupts, or you get a little jot down there like my sister always got. She's Miss Perfect. Very nice. Lovely girl. Of course she is. Then she'd come home and terrorize me and my brother. So you have the word citizenship and conversation, and the King James translators understood the context. Do you realize that every single Greek Bible corrector in the world also takes a course when he's in seminary, Bible college, or Bible institute that is called hermeneutics? And the very first rule of hermeneutics is that nothing supersedes context. And then they go right out and break that rule every day of their life. I don't care if it's a Bible, what Bible writer it is, what Bible word it is, what Greek word it is, what Hebrew word it is. Nothing overrides context. Context rules the day. These King James translators understood the context so well that they understood that this word means citizenship. But they understood that what's going on here is that Paul's talking about an impact that you're having in the heavenly places, and that's not citizenship, is where your actual place of residence, where you reside. That's not what this context is dealing with. It's dealing with the impact that you're making up there. And so therefore you have a commonality that comes together with these two terms, a place where they meet. And so the problem today is that, again, in the degeneration of the English language, someone thinks of citizenship, they think more or less in terms of where they belong. And you'll hear Christians today, they'll pull their suspenders out and say, my citizenship is in heaven. And all they're talking about is, that's where I belong. That's not what that's talking about. I know you're belong there, but that's not what this is dealing with. The words, that's, in fact, that if that were true, you know what this would say? This wouldn't say our citizenship is in heaven. It would say, I am a citizen of heaven. The S-H-I-P tells you, that's not talking about your place of residence. That's talking about the impact. But they've got even a better word in our English language to describe that, and it's conversation. Conversation is more excellent than the word citizenship. And where these two words meet is in the area of impact and influence. Both of them deal with the conduct and behavior that has a powerful and direct impact or influence upon the residence in which you do, where the place you do reside. So the more, to make sure that there's no confusion, that we're not talking at all about where you reside, the more excellent choice is conversation. Your conversation, there is a literal talking about you going on. But the talking is a talking of impact that's being made in the heavenly places. And ladies and gentlemen, that can be ruined. And it can be ruined quickly. And it can be ruined in ways that maybe you're not even aware of. And to go back to that young man issue, that young man is a young man who, as we've talked about before, is in that middle stage, and he's going to increase his involvement into the aspects and operations of his father's business. He's going to increase his education, training, and the objective goals and aims of the business. And he's going to have an increase his education for making keen and shrewd decisions that keep that business pure and keep it without compromise, without tarnish to its reputation. Appreciating the high stakes of both the father's cause, the father's business, and his own personal involvement in it. And it can all be ruined. And that's one of the wiles that the adversary is going to attempt to do to try to ruin that particular son's name and his conversation and all of that. And here's what I want to get to that you might not like. I'm not just talking about sin. Sure, a man's when you talk about this, by the way, is we'll cover this on one of the charts here when we talk about what a young man needs. He needs knowledge, a particular kind of knowledge, and he needs discretion. And in our country, it's almost every day that in the newspapers we've got a congressman or a senator who is caught in an indiscretion, has ruined his reputation, and now has to leave office. All right? So the common, ordinary way to think of indiscretion and to think of ruining your reputation, we could sit here all night and we could bring up all kinds of actors, or Tiger Woods. Actors, sports celebrities, all kinds of people who have this so-called great stand in society, whose reputation comes crashing down. Even pastors, famous ones, they get caught in hotel rooms with prostitutes. So yeah, sin is part of that, but it's not all of it. And one of the things that you need to have that comes from the subtlety, and when the young man starts to get knowledge and discretion, he starts to learn there are many more ways of ruining my reputation than that. And one of those ways is to actually go to church. Yeah, that needs to be said to something else. I was just letting that sit in the air there for a while. I said you might not like hearing this, but if you ever did get to this stage and you decided to associate, and I mean associate in the sense that I didn't just go when Bible class was closed to Triangle Bible Church, so I went somewhere else. I mean you have actually decided, I want to go to this church because, yeah, sonship, da-da-da-da-da, but they've got a great nursery program. And so you're going to now begin associating yourself with an assembly and the teaching of that assembly that is not rightly dividing the word of truth, that is not following the sonship program or the sonship curriculum, and that is believing and teaching corrupted doctrine. And you can feel so good about being there. And every angel up there that was so thrilled with your advancement as a son has now been sullied, and they just, your reputation comes crashing down and it's ruined in their sight. Now that can be recovered, but all I'm trying to give you a flavor of is to start thinking with that more acuteness, that there's more ways to ruin my reputation. And in that sense, it becomes very critical when you start thinking about being a part of a local assembly. And at that point, it is not tenable for you to throw in with an assembly that you know, in the eyes of the angels, would ruin your reputation in your Father's business. I could say more about that, but I just want to let that go for now. But that was something really powerful that comes out of that particular phase of level two, when you start dealing with that reputation. And that's why you find Paul going back and dealing with the saints who have problems that way, and why you find him teaching on things that have to do with separating at certain times. That's why those doctrines aren't there just to try to say, those are bad things to have in the assembly, or those are bad things for you to be doing. Those things are all done because there's things more at stake than most Christians ever. There's things more at stake than most grace believers ever realize is at stake in this thing. Well, anyway, how am I doing here? Not too bad. The young man, this is a great stage of it. He's going to receive, the young man is going to receive knowledge and discretion. Am I saying that right? All right, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. Oh, and let me just say this in passing. We had somebody in our assembly who said, doesn't the Proverbs turn there from you getting stuff to now you giving something? As if the son is to give subtlety to the simple? That's a total misunderstanding of the sentence structure of that. That's not what that's talking about. You're still on the receiving end. You're still getting to give. The Proverbs are going to give you. You're going to get subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. Well, let's just mention what that knowledge is. And you ought to be, you know, you people are really privileged. I want to tell you that. You know why? You're getting in 1 hour here, or in just a few minutes, what it took me months to not only learn, but I don't even know how long it took me to teach it. And so I feel guilty about even doing this with you. I may be damaging you more than I'm helping you. I don't know. I mean that.
They're students.
Yeah. Yeah. They're students. It's like my pastor said, I've mentioned it to some of you here, Jesus didn't die of a broken heart. God reserves that for pastors. All right, he's going to receive knowledge. Knowledge here is specifically knowledge concerning the son's conversation and the impact and influence of it on others. It's knowledge about his father's business, his operations, on himself, and on his ability to go on and become a wise man that he should eventually be. So you've got books like Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians that begin fleshing that out. This is why you find in books like Colossians so much said about set your affections upon the things that are above. There's people who read the Apostle Paul and they don't like what he says because they use this colloquial expression, he's too heavenly minded to be any earthly good, or something along those lines. The fact of the matter is, Paul, if you read him carefully, there's a lot of impact that you're going to make right now on this earth. In fact, some of it is going to be so bad that you're going to actually get a bad reply for it. But all I'm saying is, you can have even a good impact upon this earth, but it's not primary. The primary impact you're having is in the heavenly places where your conversation is and where your father's business is going to be. And so you're going to have to gain knowledge and more knowledge about that as you go through level two of phase two of level two. The discretion comes along. And as I said before, you get those four decision-making skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, but then you begin to realize life is not neatly comprised in four different categories where I can just take one and apply that, take another one and apply that. But sometimes you're going to have to take two of those and combine them, or three and combine them, or even all four and combine them into making certain decisions. And this is where discretion becomes very important, because the thing in front of a son now is his reputation. Now, you don't need to try writing all this down. This comes from Charles Smith's Synonyms Discriminated. When he talks about discretion, he calls it a species of discernment and has for its result, watch this, the avoidance of such errors as come from want of self-control. Or want of judgment in matters of speech and action. By the way, the book I've got of Charles Smith is 1882. So that's early. I mean, that's not all that old to me. Crabb's Synonyms goes back to 1817, and some of the other writers that I've read go back even further than that. But even as early, not as far back as 1880s, almost the turn of the 20th century, they understood discretion this way. It refers to matters of self-control. It's a kind of prudence or moderation. I say prudence tongue-in-cheek because prudence comes up in Ephesians. Discretion is a virtue when it regards the interest of others, but, watch this, when it is confined to ourselves, it is a social instinct of self-preservation. The word reserve is a synonym, and it may be said to present the negative and passive side of discretion. For reserve knows only what not to say. You ever hear somebody described as reserved? My brother's that way. He's the diametric opposite of me when it comes to talking. He's very reserved. But reserved only knows what not to say. Watch this. Discretion also knows also how to act and how to speak. That's discretion. You want to know where I get some of my insight for these words? Old English books. Dictionaries like that. All right? So you can get that kind of definition of it, but now you need to form that into a working definition. Discretion becomes a combination of really wisdom and prudence. That's why I say you're going to really thank God for your King James Bible, because when you're over there in Ephesians 1 and it talks about, Paul brings up the word prudence, the one and only time he does it, that actually goes back and reaches back into the book of Proverbs and tells you where you are in your sonship education. You change that word and you're changing your markers. You change those things up, you're changing your flags and your road markers. And you're going to wind up running over pedestrians or PDs, as Noreen calls them. I never heard that until I came here. But that's the more working definition is that it's a combination of wisdom and prudence to make judgments and or decisions with caution and circumspection in order to regulate the conduct of men. The young man needs knowledge concerning the further application, understanding of his father's business, and the discretion, because his reputation is now on the line, where he is not going to, the stakes are so high, and he sees his father's cause so big, that so many things now in his own conduct and behavior and how he's going to regulate that is going to be brought into to front and center stage, and the spotlight is going to become on that. And so he's going to need discretion to walk those paths of his father during that phase of his education. To the young man, knowledge and discretion. All right? Let's see if I've got any more there. Yeah, I do. I'm going to go through this. It's probably, well, it's not too bad for you to see there. But this is kind of a summary statement of discretion. And I'm spending time on that with you because it is such a big issue in phase two, especially of phase two of level two of your sonship education. It says, discretion is a further development of a son's decision-making skill that now focuses upon the son's conduct and behavior in view of maintaining and retaining his good reputation. That's critical. Both those words, maintaining it and retaining it. Why would I say maintaining and retaining? Because there's going to be an active, all-out assault to try to destroy your reputation from the adversary. There's going to be a maintaining of it by the doctrine that you learn and by its effectual working, but you're also going to have to deal with the adversary every step of the way. That's going to be the constant dogging of you. And it's both maintaining and retaining his good reputation in pure conversation so as to not bring his conversation and or cause into disrepute, disgrace, discredit, dishonor, or even basic disfavor with others. Knowing the high cause personally and the highness of the father's business, noble discretion is the key to the son successfully realizing the reward of the inheritance. That's exactly what Paul talks about in Ephesians. The reward of the inheritance and qualification to manage the operations of the father's business, whereas indiscretion would result in ruining his conversation and losing his reward and high position in his father's business. So it's a big deal. And even though you're compared to Romans, if you squeeze them between your hands or fingers, it doesn't cover a whole lot of information. It doesn't have to. I always like, well, I maybe shouldn't do that, but I've learned not to use baseball illustrations in hockey country, but I always loved watching a great pitcher, and one that comes to mind is a fellow who pitched for the Atlanta Braves, later the Chicago Cubs. His name was Greg Maddux. And the thing that was so great about Greg Maddux, when he was on the mound, he could start a ball game and actually be making mistakes. And his manager would sit in the clubhouse, and the pitching coach would sit there. And sometimes, early on when he was doing this, he might be struggling in the opening innings, and the pitching coach would never come out and talk to him. Because he knew that, leave him alone, he'll figure it out, and he'll make the correction. And the beauty of watching him was to see that he didn't have to be perfect every game he started. He could figure out what he was doing wrong, make the corrections, and then he could win that game. And that is far better than having to have somebody constantly come out and constantly tell you what you're doing wrong and constantly make corrections for you. It's the difference between being a child and being an adult. And a son in this particular stage of his life has now the capacity to be able to realize, I can now see further than just simply this is a decision or a road that I could go down. But you now start seeing ramifications. Okay, I have freedom to do this. I have liberty to do this. I could go down this road. I could choose this path and go down it. But a son who gets to be in the young man stage, just about to be a wise man, he can now see farther down that road. Discretion starts telling him, I'm going to have problems down there. It may not look bad now, but there's a problem that I could incur later on down that road. And he'll wisely choose a different path. Your father says, I can develop all of that in you. There's not a person in this room tonight he can't do that with. Not only that, he wants to do that. So anyway, what's next up here? Oh, that's good. He died for me to be able to do that way. I think the Father deserves better than what he's getting in most of Christianity today. If I gave my son to do that and had the rotten response that most churches and Christians today give him when he offers this to them, I go back to the issue. It's a good thing I'm not God. Well, that actually takes us to, like I said, I thought I'd end this one early a little bit tonight. I think what I'll do is probably stop it there, but let's just go back to the table of contents once again real quickly. And notice that phase one, you go through the basic orientation and establishment, and these four decision-making skills. There's your longest period of instruction. This is the next longest, not as long as that, and this is the shortest of all. My folks are really happy to hear that too, because of how long we've been in the book of Romans. And tomorrow morning what we'll do is we'll take a look at level three, which has some things in it that just rock you on your heels. If you think this is good, you ain't seen nothing yet. When you talk about what it means for a wise man to hear and to increase learning, and then talk about what it means to be a man of understanding to attain unto wise counsels, and that's counsels in the plural for a reason. It's not that he's going to become a wise counselor, even though he will be. This is another reason. Who was it was talking to me about one-on-one counseling? I don't remember who it was that we were talking about. I'm horrible at it. I'm like the worst counselor in the world. I just can't talk to people one-on-one very well. But I can become a man who can attain unto wise counsels. We'll talk about what all that means tomorrow morning. So, preview of coming attractions is tomorrow. To finish everything off, we'll deal with level three. And then on the last lesson, we're going to come back, and I want to talk especially about this section of the table of contents and what happens to you in Romans chapter 8 and verses 16, especially through 39. And it's just going to be a brief survey of it. But that is one of the most fascinating things that will ever happen to your heart. All right? We'll stop it right there for tonight. Call it quits. It's coming up on 10 o'clock or so, and